You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right. Welcome to episode 19 of the Beer Tour Guy Show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, and I have a great guest here today to kick off what I'm calling my 10th year in the tour business for Motor City Brew Tours. And what better way? I just like had this epiphany as I was taking a shower this morning. Maybe that sounds inappropriate if I'm saying it like that. But I'm like, holy crap. So I got you on here. And Ray of Sherwood Brewing Incorporated in Shelby Township was Ray. I've known Ray for a long time, and we'll get to that background. But you guys were the first place I ever took a bus tour to in 2009 when I started Motor City Brew Tours. And this year is my 10th year. And I'm kicking off all kinds of new stuff. But I'm also love to talk about where I started in this business. Like, how fun is that?
Yeah. 10 years ago.
Doesn't that sound crazy?
Yeah. Well, greetings.
Yeah. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. So, okay. So, you're Ray.
Yep.
Thank you.
Notorious R-A-Y.
I got you here. That's pretty exciting, right?
It took some...
we won't get into that, right?
A little extra work.
We'll be positive. It's all cool. I don't care. I roll with it.
23 hours late.
No big deal.
Just a shade under a day.
So, okay. So, let's see. Let's crack open a beer and let's just start talking. We'll kind of start with your background in the industry and what got you into brewing and all that stuff.
For sure.
And then we'll just take it from there and we'll go where the conversation goes. That's typically how I run these. It's not too complicated. It's just a show about the beer industry, right?
Yeah.
So what did you bring there for you?
I brought two different beers. And they're both kind of big, bold flavored beers. So
what a great way to kick off my Thursday.
Yeah. We'll start with a coffee beer. How's that sound?
That does sound spectacular. So that's Blackjack?
Blackjack.
Yeah, yep. I've had that before, right? You guys have brewed that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had
this
that's
for
a
great
while.
Beer. I love these shorty growlers is what I call the glass ones, the short glass ones. I think those look – thank you. I think those look super cool. When did you guys switch over to kind of the shorter ones like that?
We still have the regular growlers, and then these are the howlers.
Yeah.
And we had the original howlers we got were the ones that just looked like miniature growlers. The glass company we use out of Bay City, they're called Prestige. They came up, you know, sent us a sample of these and we're like, oh, that's cool. You know, it's different. Something unique. We like to, I know like there's people that collect these and stuff like that. So it's like, if we can find something different, and it's functional, yeah, we'll definitely grab that.
Sometimes I feel like I'm collecting them and I'm not really collecting them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
every once in a while, like, I look at my counter. I'm like, well, no wonder I don't have any counter space.
I just did a purge and, my buddy's like, are you going to like sell those? Like I went through glasses cause the wife's like, okay, our cabinet's exploding. And you know, like I had in the back, I had some of them were triple stacked pint glasses, you know, and she's like, okay, I think we're past our level, right?
Unless we're going to open a bar.
Yeah, I know, right? And if I open a bar, I would have enough glassware for, you know, 500 guests or something. And I'm sure you feel the same way at times. Like I think I purged 60 glasses and I would say none of them, all of them were cool.
Yeah, you probably
it's like I don't even know how to decide. Yeah, I know it's so hard. It's like, oh, this is cool. This is a story. I remember when I got this. Like, I don't, you know how it is. Like, you don't always buy them, get hooked up with stuff here and there, and it just accumulates.
That's part of where this started for us is just being a beer fan and traveling and going to different beer places. And, you know, my goal was always to have a pint glass from every place I went
sure.
to that I had a beer at. And, did that for a couple of years, and then what we found is at some point I was like, all right, well, I don't have shelf space, so I put like 50 away. And that was still even before we opened the brewery, you know.
So this is very early days.
Yeah, and I still have – like I've got a cupboard full that's maxed out, you know, and it's like every glass is in there opposite ways so they can all fit in the shelf.
Oh, that's definitely what I was doing or still do.
And frankly, it's like every time I'm like, all right, I'm not buying any more glasses. Don't need any more glasses. And then I'll get out somewhere and I'll be like, oh, okay, that's cool.
That's cool. Right?
It happens.
I say that still with beer shirts too.
Yep.
And then I was on vacation over Thanksgiving and we're out in in the Lake Jackson area, which is outside of Houston. And we were right on the coast. We went to Galveston Island. Cool little brewery, right? It was like a small business Saturday. They had a little deal going and I just thought, oh, I'll buy a shirt then, right?
Yeah,
20% off. Hey, boom. Next thing you know, I'm like two shirts. They're giving me a free glass. I'm like, shit, how did this happen? You know, but the shirt was cool. Wife got a shirt. So, you know, you can't really stop that from happening, right?
But and it's like when it comes to shirts, it's the same thing. It's like, well, I don't need another shirt. I can go like probably 3 months without doing laundry and
easily
not run out of shirts.
Totally,
you know?
Get
and,
it.
I probably the pile of laundry would be more my way. That's like more of like, oh, there, I have too many clothes to walk around. I just need to do laundry, but I haven't run out of shirts yet. But at the end of the day, it's like there's always new designs. And now it's like it used to be the old boxy T-shirts. Well, now they're actually using nice material and a comfortable shirt. So I'm like, oh. And there's shirts that have outgrown.
Yeah, I get that, right? I didn't think that would.
This is so short.
How did that happen in the beer industry?
It's the waist part of it shrinking, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's because we're getting older, though.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back some days. So you started out homebrewing, right?
Homebrewing. I had a friend in college, and he was in college. I was actually, I had just moved up to Michigan State to work, and met him through my brother. He was homebrewing, and I was like, okay, well, that's kind of cool. You know, I went over, and I think I helped him bottle some beers the first time, and then told him I was interested in it, and we went to a small shop in Lansing, bought some ingredients, made a batch of beer. I think I found a bottle of that like probably 5 years ago.
Oh, wow. You know, really?
So it was like, it wouldn't have been drinkable, but it was almost 20 years old.
Yikes.
And then, you know, did that and decided to get my own gear and start doing it myself. And that was back when Things Beer was in Williamston before it was part of Michigan Brewing Company. And I still went there even when it was owned
That's
by
right.
Michigan
that
Brewing
was
Company.
Separate. I kind of forget that that was separate.
Yeah. And I, you know, Bobby was a customer there. So when he.
So Bobby Mason for, wait, who?
Yeah, Bobby Mason.
Okay. Making sure I'm saying this correctly. Right. Gotcha.
So that's where he got into homebrewing, you know? So that's how long that place had been.
That's amazing when you think about that.
Yeah.
Then he goes on, he opens Michigan Brewing Company, and then you eventually bartended there. Is that correct?
Yeah, I bartended for a short period of time there. And then, yeah, I get to know, that's where I met Dan Rogers, Mike Earnhardt. So, I mean, there's a lot of people, Scott Isham I met there, who actually is the first person that gave me a chance to brew up at Harper's.
At Harper's in East Lansing there.
Yeah. And Kim Kowalski too.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
talk about going old school with names.
You know, and Joe Short would come in there too.
Yeah, that's true.
Like Joe Short. And a lot of those guys got their start there, you know, or worked there at some point. So they would all come through there and, you know, if Scott needed yeast or malt or something like that, he'd come and get it from Dan or and vice versa. So, yeah, it was a lot smaller in industry then too. You know, like nowadays, it's such a big, diverse industry that, you know, these guys are the old senior members now. So,
isn't that wild? And then you're kind of that next phase of it if you think about it, because eventually you opened – or no, I'm jumping ahead too far here. So then you eventually became manager at Bruin World, which mm-hmm. was the Bruin store in Warren that was connected with Kunin.
Yeah, it was the homebrew side.
Yeah, how long did you work there?
It was about 2.5 years, I think.
Okay. That's when I met you. And then I went there brewing a batch of beer when they did the Brew on Premise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had a good conversation with you. You're like, yeah, I'm going to open up a brewery in Shelby Township. And then I was all excited because I'm from Utica, Shelby Township originally. My parents still live there, my sister. And I'm like, wow, that's a great idea. That's a great place for a brewery. And
there was nothing out that way back
nothing.
Then. So, yeah. And those guys were always really cool about that. You know, I think, you know, coming from where they came from, where they had that bug is being homebrewers and getting more and more into it and growing it into what eventually took over the hardware store there. They were very receptive to the fact and very understanding of that. You know, when I went in there to work, I was trying to grow my experience and do my own thing.
Yeah.
So when it came time to open our place up, they were very helpful. And, you know, when we bought the brew system at an auction, Brett was actually – I was in Michigan. Brett was down in Florida looking at the equipment and you know, telling me like, okay, you've got – you know, this system is, you know, brew tanks. It's fermenters. It's serving tanks. You know, it's everything inside this room. It's everything inside that room. So it was like, this would be a good deal if you can get it. You know, I mean, like, so I had
– just to have access, someone that you could bounce that off of, that's a big deal.
And somebody had done everything before.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it was pretty cool to have them there to help us through some of the, you know – there's a lot of stuff that comes up when you're opening up your own place that you're just like, I can't imagine, you know, cutting floor drains and running, you know, all the different, like, okay, well, I've got a plumber for running pipes and I need a, you know, a different guy for running floor drains. I need a different guy for running gas pipes, you know, I need a different guy for running steam pipes, you know, and you just can't imagine that when you go into it, like if you've only homebrewed,
you would never have an idea. On a bigger system, and it just starts.
Just magically bigger.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
I hit times 7 on my calculator and
right? Yeah, easy. That seems simple.
So, yeah, it was quite an adventure just trying to get a place open back then.
So then 2006, you guys open up.
Yep.
Let's see. What was it? Spring, March? I can't remember.
August.
Oh, I'm sorry. Totally not what I just said. August. Okay. I totally remember. I was one of your early customers for sure. It was fun taking people over there because my parents live maybe 10 minutes from there. So it was a very newer concept for most people. And I had friends who live in Sterling Heights still, and then we would always meet there. That was fun.
It was, being like having worked my way into it, I was, for a while pretty conscious of what I liked about different places and what I felt needed to be better, different at other places. And with all that as a background, you try to apply all those things as you go into opening up your own place. And it was a different concept because we had the microbrew license at that time and I wanted to put it in a kitchen, which full kitchen with a microbrew license. I don't know that there were very many other examples of
that. I can't think of any at that time. No.
And
you were doing wine and you had the soda thing going out of the gate, right? Eventually with some cider.
Occasional mead here.
Yeah. Was part of that because you worked with the Kunin guys and saw how they had wine and mead and saw that obviously that was a good add to the business?
Oh, absolutely. And that's part of what enabled us to do it the way we wanted to do it. Like the full restaurant idea is a lot more of a challenge if you don't have something else, wine, cider.
That makes sense.
Or mead, soda as well. It's like people, I think soda was always an afterthought for breweries, oh, we'll have a root beer,
Yep. Oh, we'll have the Sprecher stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is good stuff.
It's great. Totally. I'm not knocking it. I love it.
Yeah, it was always kind of an afterthought. And so if we want to do a restaurant, we actually needed to really pay attention to that. When I worked at Michigan Brewing Company, they were working with I don't want to misquote. So they were working with a winery to try to get their own wine going at that point and like basically getting a wine license to buy wine and bond and rebottle it. But when I was there, they hadn't had that running. And I think the last time I visited – they didn't, I don't remember seeing wine.
I don't ever remember seeing wine there either. That's an interesting point. I only ever went and drank beer there. And then once I toured the MSU distilling thing when that was there right before it closed.
Yeah, that was
I don't remember what year that was.
That was maybe interesting because that was not at the auction. So like that.
I know. Well, they got it.
Must have got in there.
They got it out of there. I mean, yeah. I remember I had a contact with a guy that was running that program, and then he specifically came in the day I bust a group out there, and it was crazy. I had all these football players, and then a bachelorette party on that tour. It was a mess, and I really didn't even want to bring them in there at that point. I think I did Liberty Street.
We're gonna need a crowbar and some bleach to clean this truck.
You know who I had? Who's now here? But then he was a Packer. I had T.J. Lang.
Oh, no.
On that tour, yeah, and I didn't know him at that point, but my wife did because my wife's from Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
And she was real excited, but he was from Eastern Michigan, I believe. And he had a bunch of his football friends. They just got lit and they were having fun, whatever. I'm not here to knock T.J. Lang. I don't want him coming to my house and kicking my ass or something, right? It was just one of those days, right, where people drank more than maybe a normal tour and there's more driving in between. And, those guys were buying bombers of, like, Badass to bring back on the bus, because I allowed all that. And
yeah.
I had to bring them back to Liberty Street and, but I think I started at Liberty Street when I did that. I think that was the pickup point. And we did Liberty Street, and then we drove out to – we might have done Witch's Hat, and then we might have gone to Michigan Brewing. I can't totally remember. and then it's just a long drive back, right?
Yeah.
And I get back to Liberty, and I'm like, I don't want any of you guys going inside Liberty Street because I like Joe, and I don't want Joe to ban me from, like, Liberty Street forever, right?
You're texting Joe, lock
the doors. Yeah, please don't let any of these people in. I'm just dropping them off and hoping they get a cab or, they're not my problem, but, whatever.
We did a couple bus tours. I wouldn't say bus tours. We took a bus to a couple different beer festivals. And
I was on one of those.
Yeah.
I did Winter, I think. when you did Winter?
Yeah,
did you do Winter once?
Winter, I think we did Winter once to Lansing and once to Grand Rapids, maybe twice to Grand Rapids. And it was always too much of an adventure too.
Ooh, it's, I mean, I still do Winter and Summer for buses, but I have a pretty – I have a core group of people that do it every year. And then there's the ones that kind of come in and out that seems to keep the bullshit down a little bit.
Yeah, if everybody knows one another. I think the one we did in Lansing, there was a guy that tried to fight his way onto the bus. And then I think we only did one in Grand Rapids. And the one we did in Grand Rapids, we weren't at the festival for 10 minutes. And a fellow jumped the fence, got on the field, ran around the field and got thrown out.
Oh my God!
So he
oh yeah, because that because the first year they did that. Okay, then I was definitely on your bus for that. Wow, I don't remember that.
I guess he was. You know, I had to leave early, so I'm there setting up.
And oh my God!
He got really drunk on the bus on the way there, and immediately got thrown out and spent the whole rest of the time on the bus because
that's the worst.
You know, I'm not going to send home.
Yeah, you can't
30
do that.
Some odd people and. And I want to say maybe we did one to the Summer Beer Festival or two to the Summer Beer Festival.
I think I only did your bus that one time for Winter, now that I say that. And then I had fun. I didn't have an issue with it. I eventually started Motor City Brew Tours, and then I started doing stuff like that. I eventually took over the one that Mills used to do. Mm-hmm. They used to do one to the summer, and I was pretty regular at Rochester Mills at that point. I said, hey, I'm starting this company. Why don't I just run the bus for you? And I did it out of there for a few years.
I think – weren't we a pickup point? For a year
or two? Maybe. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe I did do that once. Wow, that really brings me back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've really changed those things around over the years.
That was back in the day when the breweries used to sell tickets.
Yeah, I mean, I used to direct buy at the brewery. Like, I used to, from Eric Brigman, I'd direct buy, pay in cash. Mm-hmm. He would let me do it, like, up to a few days before the event. Now, for the winter, and, you know, I'm not knocking the guild. That's how you got to do it. I've already prepaid 40-some-odd tickets and to the guild for winter. Mm-hmm. And I haven't even sold that out, you know? But you got to do that.
Yeah.
They need to do it. They need to control it that way.
It's been hard. You know, I know they open up Friday nights on a lot of things. And Friday night, like the Winter Beer Festival is, you know, I think the 3 years that they've done it, they've had challenges all 3 years. The second year was actually
yeah, there's always like a weather challenge.
First year was like so cold that
lines were freezing.
Kegs were freezing.
Yeah, I remember that. Like, I had a friend there with Lansing Brewing. And no, he was with Griffin Claw at that point. Same thing. I remember him bringing like the jockey box into his hotel room and putting
hair
dryers to him. And
we did the same. And then, we didn't bring the jockey boxes back, but Vivant brought one of their trucks out. And they loaded a bunch of the jockey boxes in there and they took that back to the brewery.
Oh, wow.
And then opened the back up just so all that stuff would have a chance to thaw out overnight.
God.
And then it was just as cold the next day.
Yeah, I remember coming that next day and that might be the coldest one I've ever been to. I thought
it was outrageously cold that year.
Yeah. It made a lot of people probably not come the next year. And a lot of my friends didn't come for a couple years after that.
Yeah, that Friday night being the first Friday night, you know, like it gets dark out. It's that much colder.
Yeah. It doesn't help. You're on the pavement. I mean, it's not doing you any favors.
No. Unless they open that field up. There's not many other options either, though. Mm-mm. So the year they did it in the grandstands, there was an adventure.
Well, that was real cold, too, because that got real icy everywhere. I remember being in, like, the bathroom because they had, like, heaters blowing in there. And, like, we were hanging out in the bathroom for a while because it was just so cold. And
drinking beer in the can.
Oh, man. I mean, what else can you do, you know?
We were in like a small tent off to the side, and we were standing on probably an inch or two of ice, and we were right next to Todd Parker. He's wearing shorts.
I know. He's so crazy.
And my feet were just absolutely – I didn't bring a jacket. You know, I was wearing like a jersey with a hoodie on underneath.
Oh, my God.
So it was everything I could do to stay out of the wind. But overall, it was like my feet being cold from standing on that ice for so long. People going up and down the stairs with all that ice. It was crazy.
I was so nervous walking around. I can't believe I didn't kill myself walking around. I'm sure lots of people ate it.
The VIP, do you remember how many – there was like a huge set of stairs to go up the VIP.
Yeah.
I think I went up one time just to warm up, and I was like, man, I don't see me making it up and down those stairs any more times. So,
In the height of Winter Beer Fest buses – there was a year – I was talking about this with someone last night. There was a year where I brought four buses out there.
Holy cow.
I bought something like $14,000 worth of festival tickets. And it was super stressful, you know. And like every bus had two pickup points and there's lots of moving variables. And Once they started opening up to 2 days, a lot of people started making weekends of it in GR, and then I really don't get that business that way anymore. Now I just kind of do one bus, and I'm lucky if I fill that. And, you know, if I could sell enough to kind of get me there and a couple friends, and maybe I make a couple bucks from that, then that's kind of how I look at it. That's,
justifiable, yeah, at that point.
Because I don't automatically want to spend a weekend up there. I'm having enough fun in breweries. I don't need to do that all the time. But
yeah, unless you worked out like a hotel package, yeah, type thing.
Totally.
Which, you know, might make it more worth your while. But then again, you know, you start adding your price point.
It's a big cost to it. Yeah.
At that point.
And people don't always get that. So I'm doing a 2 day to Traverse City in April that I'm trying to see if I can sell through. And in that case, I didn't, they have a rate for the hotel, but they book the hotel part by themselves. And then they pay for my tour package minus the hotel. It's interesting. So I can keep the price more reasonable.
You put it on them.
And then what happens is some people will like double up, triple up in a room then. Because if you bundle it all in, they don't have a way around it, right? It's,
yeah,
like, oh, hey, I had to pay another $125 on top of that. You know, this way, a couple buddies, they can all crash in a room and, you know,
sleep on the floor or on the whatever couch and stuff.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, actually.
Yeah, it was something.
It's a nice way around it.
Some way we changed it for this year.
And the mindset's different, too. Like, if you have a price tag that includes all that stuff, it includes all that stuff.
So yeah. You're like, $300? Holy shit.
Yeah.
But when you break it down, like, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Right. You know, it doesn't, you can be like, oh, continental breakfast, you know, like,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, if you say, okay, well, it's $120 for the, you know, the bus and the festival admission, they might look at that and like, oh, okay. And then they, you know, they might spend $300 when they add, yep, their hotel in it, but it's not all in one place.
Right.
So more approachable that way.
Yeah. It's just funny how you learn that stuff over time, right?
Right.
Like, think of, you know, you're in your, what, 13th year.
Yep.
So think of all the different things you're doing running your business since you started in 06. Like, what are some major changes? You've done a lot of change, for example, to your kitchen, right? You've changed that program around a lot.
Surprisingly, other than replacing the equipment, most of the equipment's like the same.
Or I mean the menu. Setup. Maybe the I say it like that and how really it's more from scratch than how you really started it, right?
Yeah. When we first started off, you know, we were just – that was part of it, having worked at Kunin and Michigan Brewing Company is the two major places. Neither one of those had a kitchen, you know, and I worked at Harper's, but Harper's, you know, we brewed, we were the only ones in the building for, you know, the first couple hours, and the kitchen crew would show up and they were a totally different crew, you know?
Yeah.
We didn't talk
really
to them,
working with them.
To us. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So that, you know, that was something that I had the biggest learning curve on, you know, where I had to figure out, and going into it, we were just looking at like a real basic menu that we could work through and learn fast and, you know, serve a lot of people without a lot of staff. You know, if I had two people back there, my hope was that two people would be able to, you know, cover.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Hindsight. Right.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
It seems to make sense. Yeah.
But, you know, as we got more and more into it, obviously, you know, it was always a stretch to try to do it with like two people. Like, nowadays with the way we do the menu, it's like we have people there during the day prepping food, putting stuff away, and there's always something to do back there, you know, whereas that's not something we really conceived. But on the other hand, the quality of our food's a lot different than it was. You know, it's not, you know, our freezer isn't packed full of appetizers and fries and all this stuff. You know, it's our freezer's packed full of ingredients that, you know, we might not need to use fast enough. And then my cold room, which is now two cold rooms, has got shelves and shelves and shelves of fresh ingredients and prepped, you know, like soups and backup soups and, you know, backups of everything that's going to go online. Cause you know, you start running, you know, we'll have four or five people in there at a time, sometimes six on a busy Friday night.
Wow.
Or seven, you know, like you've got an expediter, you got two people on each side of the line. You got a guy who's, you know, doing dish tank prep and filling the line for you. You know, it's like, it hops, everything's, you know, we have a much more diverse menu. We have a lot more, you know, it used to be pizzas and salads and a few sandwiches. Well, now it's burgers. It's, you know, chicken salads. It's chicken. It's
I've had something different every time I've gone
cheese,
in now. Where
yeah.
In the early years, that obviously wasn't how I approached it. I had my same go-to burger. I don't remember what I get a turkey sandwich, I think, every time before. Now I jump around.
Yeah, it's, you know, and that's – we try to also keep like – little limited time only things and fresh menu items. And it like you know, it's always changing. Like, we figure out different ways to do things, better ways to do things. And we're getting ready to do like a whole menu makeover right now. So we're like, all right, well, what are we going to get rid of? You know, sometimes we get rid of stuff because it's, you know, it doesn't sell fast enough. Sometimes we get rid of stuff because it's, you know, even as a popular menu item might be just too impractical to make, you know, like when you start adding in what all the labor is, it's like, well, all right, unless this is bringing people from out of state, it doesn't really make sense to have on the menu. So, and we need to streamline things sometimes just because we generally don't have a very big staff. We don't have a very big kitchen. So, and you can't have a one single food ticket waiting on one item to cook where everything else is, can be made in like 3 or 4 minutes and you've got, oh, I need like 12 and a half. You know,
yeah, those are things I would never think of until I was living it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you think of it pretty quick when you're,
you're like, I would think so.
All right, let's get this ticket started. Well, this thing takes twice as long as everything else to make. You know, it's like, so things come and go like that. And, you know, we try to involve other companies. We paired up with a Quarter Sausage Company to add some menu items. So we have a mac and cheese with quarter sausage on top. We call Bangers and Mac. We've got, you know, we're working with Jail's Smokehouse. They make a barbecue sauce with one of our beers. They make a hot sauce with us and stuff. So it's nice to find other companies that have the same kind of, you know, small business, grassroots kind of a beginning.
Do you find that easier now to find partners like that than you did maybe 10 years ago?
Oh, I think so. I think it, in a weird way, I think the craft beer industry has opened up other industries in everything. You know, it's like just actually on my way here today, you know, I look over and I see this big C on a building and it's Craft Hair Salon, you know, and I'm like, yeah, in addition to craft just being a buzzword that people are putting on everything.
Flagstar Bank, they craft solutions for you.
Yes.
Which, I'm a Flagstar Bank customer, but I can't say I care for that slogan a whole lot.
I laugh every time I see it. And I know. You know, because I also am a Flagstar Bank customer and it's just, it cracks me up. Yeah, craft banking, you know, like all the different things. But I think what's really happened is that people's minds have been open up to buying things from smaller, like local things. You know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, almost 30 years ago, I started playing guitar, you know, and there was two pedal companies, there's two major guitar companies and two major amp companies and, or maybe three or four, but you know, nowadays you go into a guitar store and there's pedals from 40 different brands. You know, you have small guitar string manufacturers, straps from, you know, like that craft mentality has worked its way into the guitar industry. And that's just like one example. You could probably pick anything. And there's that somebody is out there trying to do a localized handmade version of it, a craft version of it, wine, cider, mead.
You know, so true.
Food,
yeah.
You know, like there's, you know, I feel like the chain restaurants have they've got the uphill battle now where it used to be like, that's all people wanted ever because they were afraid to try anything new. You know, they get off, you know, exit 150, they're going to look over and see, all right, well, what sign do I recognize? Applebee's.
Great. Yeah. I'm there.
Nowadays they look around and they're like, okay, well, let me search on my phone because I can do that and I don't have to worry about that. And they're looking past all the Applebee's and stuff like that because.
But now what else do you see on some of those exit signs? You see a brewery sign.
Oh, yeah.
Which was not something we would see. Like, did you ever think you'd see the day where – like if you're on I-94 going from Michigan on your way to Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. All those exits, bam, 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 and you just – you see like a ton of – or billboards. Have you seen those Bells and Perrin billboards that are out there? They're all over Metro Detroit.
I've seen the Bells. I have not seen the Perrin one.
The Perrin one's for Black Ale, and then the Bells is the two-hearted one. I was I was in Toronto, and I saw a Bells billboard, and that blew my mind.
It's crazy. Like one of our customers way back in the day, he's like a huge sales manager for Bells. I think he's sales and training manager. And like just being friends with him on social media, I see he's in Colorado.
He's all over the place.
Yeah, all doing all these trainings as Bells launches into new markets. And I know for a while there's different breweries like, you know, oh, hey, you know, we're really going to focus on Michigan only. Very similar to what New Glarus did. Like New Glarus, right in the beginning, they grew really fast.
Stayed that way.
And they realized that they couldn't grow fast and still do what they wanted to do. So they put it Wisconsin only. And I think a lot of Michigan breweries really respected that and wanted to stick with that. But, you know, now you see like everybody's like, well, there's more customers out there than Michigan. And with Michigan being as big a state with beer, they have to look, you know, there's a lot of other states like Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio where they don't have as many breweries as Michigan probably. Well, I used to be able to say put together.
Yeah, I used to say that too, and I'm sure that's different now.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years.
Yeah, and it's I know that because, you know, I'll drive through Ohio and then
–
Yeah, I
was out in Columbus in the fall and we went to BrewDog, stayed at that BrewDog hotel out there. Uh-huh. We hit tons of breweries out there and every brewery I went into, I'm like, how long you been here? Oh, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, right?
Yeah.
Some crazy stat of how they've like doubled in a couple of years all their breweries there because they really had a pent-up demand. You think about it. They weren't where we are here in Michigan.
Right, yeah. You know, I it's funny. It's like I went to – we were driving back from South Carolina last year and stopped in some small town just because they had gas, they had food. And when we were there, Lisa's like, whoa, hey, check this out. There's a brewery in town. And we went there, had a great meal, a nice little brewery, but probably not 2 years old. You yeah. know?
You go in and they already have this varied list of beer. You know, like there's no way – like when you started in 06, you would have launched with – the range that some of these breweries seem like they launch with now blows my mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, it just wasn't common to do that, honestly.
You know, and we've always tried to have that, like that broad menu that has – in broad in the sense that, you know, we count for all tastes.
Sure you do.
But nowadays it's like the extremes that you can push on a menu and, you know, it just seeing how different places pick – like attack that, you know, like even restaurants and tap houses, there's – you know, you say it's easy to find a brewery. It's even easier to find like a tap house, more or less, somebody boasting 50 or 60 taps.
Sure.
But yeah, you go into those places and they'll have double, triple IPAs. They'll have, you know, super strong beers, super, you know, weird beers. It's just, it's crazy the range of beer that's just the sheer magnitude of it.
I had a cucumber lime Kolsch when I was in Toronto. Very weird. It was an odd taste, very the cucumber was a bit too much in it.
So we started doing cucumber beer at Summer Beer Festival probably, what, 4 or 5 years ago? And I didn't bring one this last year just because there were so many popping up. Yeah, it's – you know, that was one of those things. We put it in there just because I swear to God I had like something like a Gatorade or something like that was cucumber flavor. And I was like, well, that's weird. I got to try it just to try it. And then I was like, huh. All right, now I'm going to put this in a beer. And that same – What's weird about cucumber is it's a palate cleanser.
Sure it is.
So in a beer, it's totally, you know, beer I feel like has a lingering flavor. And then you get cucumber that cleans the palate. It works almost against itself, but it picks up that feature from the cucumber. So you drink a beer that is refreshing and just in the sense that it doesn't linger in your mouth.
I think my thing was if it was the summer, I probably would have enjoyed it even more.
Oh, totally.
I mean, it was freezing out and then I did it in between having stouts. So it worked for that, but I probably couldn't have had two, but I would have been all right if I was outside on a lounge chair
I can't imagine making that beer if it wasn't like 85, 90 hours.
Yeah. It seemed weird they even had it on.
Yeah.
But again, it was, you know, interesting stuff. All the breweries I hit in Toronto were pretty interesting.
So. Well, in the Canadian market's so much different than the United States market. And that's just a matter of like their laws are different. We went to Toronto.
Cost more, that's for sure.
Yeah. Brew on premise is still there. You can find brew on premise places up in Canada. Where in the United States, it's
pretty
almost
much
completely gone. Yeah.
I couldn't even name a brew on premise here.
I don't know if Saugatuck still does it.
Maybe they do. That's a good question. I don't know.
But yeah, we went to Toronto probably 10 years ago and could not find a brewery in a city like Toronto. And I was like, there was one brewery there. And we went in and they had a wedding booked, so they wouldn't let us in.
like, that's a downer.
Yeah, it was, you know, because I still have never been to a brewery in Canada, you know, so that's like one of those, every time I go to a new state, I mean, like almost Lisa will tell you to a fault. I'm like, all right, I got to find a brewery. You know, she's like, no, we don't. You know, we got two kids and two dogs in the car. We need to go. I'm like, but maybe they got tacos.
Come on, I just need a beer. Yeah. You know, the kids will get food. It's fine.
Yeah, we'll eat. So yeah, you have to dial that back a little bit.
Yeah, that's how I was. I mean, we're pretty spoiled, obviously, in this industry. So when I'm on vacation, I don't push it too hard with the wife. She likes to do that too, so I'm lucky. Yeah. But I don't say, okay, you know, we're going to spend 4 days in Toronto seeing the sights and we're going to hit, you know, 2,000 breweries, right? Like, that's not going to fly.
Yeah.
But I did get to go to 5 or 6. Luckily, every brewery there had cider. It wasn't always their cider. It was someone else's. And then I took her to an actual cidery that was in, like, downtown Toronto proper. So she was in heaven, right?
Bonus, like, points, right?
Yeah. It seems cider is fairly it's kind of all over the place in Toronto. I definitely saw it at pretty much every bar, restaurant we went to, at least one cider.
I feel like that's probably true of the United States.
Yeah, I think it is,
or
more now.
Metro Detroit, I should say. I can't speak for the whole country.
And a decent cider at that. It wasn't like just some mass brand, you know. It's not something local.
Yeah. Cider's not going to go away, I don't think.
How do you guys do with cider? You rotate in some, right?
Right. Well,
with your meat and wine.
Our goal is always to have a cider on tap. And if not, we'll have like a still cider. And we generally will try to have both if we can. But we sell through it pretty regularly. I would think – I'd have to check, but I think we sell through about 4 to 6 kegs a month, depending on the time of the year.
That seems pretty good. Yeah. Okay.
Like little 5-gallon kegs. It's not like we're making – you know, 50 gallons a week or something like that. But we go through it pretty well. And we rotate it out. Ironically, we feel like the sweeter the fruit that we put in it, the faster it sells. And then if we just do like apple, it's like one of the slowest sellers. They want cider, but they don't want it to taste like cider. So it's a weird.
Yeah, I'd say my wife, who doesn't drink beer, only does cider and mead and wine. She wants something different all the time. She doesn't want just regular apple.
Right.
It's funny how she's the same. She's just like a beer drinker in that respect, right? We get bored and we want to try new stuff.
I think that's what cider represents. It's kind of like a crossover for wine drinkers that have for years watched, you know, beer drinkers have fun walking around with a can or a bottle of beer somewhere. And, you know, you walk around with a bottle of wine in a glass, people are going to
stare. What are you doing?
Like, well, that guy, he has a problem there.
Yeah.
but, you know, if you're carrying around a can of cider, I mean, it's just, it drinks like beer, you know, it's the same kind of thing. You can have a, you know, drink a pint with your buddies, that kind of a thing, or it.
I mean, they're canon. All these cider makers are canon too, right? So you can pretty much take it everywhere. I mean, obviously Blake's is pumping that everywhere, but Vandermill was probably one of the early ones canning it out here. Now you see all those other little guys have really followed suit with that.
Yeah. The mobile canning guys must be super busy.
I would think so. All right. So what's this other beer you got here?
The other beer I brought.
That's a suggestion of, hey, I want to try the other beer.
I'm running empty. I'm getting the jitters from the coffee beer, one or the other. The second beer I brought is White Elephant, which is our Christmas ale.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think I've had that in a while. I don't get out as much to your brewery as I'd like. So I'm always talking to you at festivals and drinking at festivals because that's my chance.
Which, if it's not Winter Festival, we don't generally – I mean, this is
– So this would be something you'd have at the Winter Beer Fest a lot of times?
Yeah. They just opened it up, so I have to figure out what I'm going to bring to Winter Beer Festival this year. This year's batch is 11%.
Oh, whoa. Okay. Yeah, it is.
So it's oaky. It's got cinnamon.
Wow. I can't talk for a few minutes here. I'm going to have to turn up the volume on this so I sound louder.
So in addition to being a strong ale, we actually age it on raw white oak and cinnamon. So it has a big
– Oh, I like it.
It might seem boozy almost because of the oak characteristic on it. But it also picks up a lot as far as – it picks up flavors that I think people assume are in there that are just from the oak, like vanilla, coconut. A lot of people –
Yeah, as it's lingering on here a little bit, I'm picking up on it better.
And then – so it's just basically we take oak chips and – cinnamon sticks. Just fill a keg with it, fill the beer up, and then
– How long have you been doing this one?
Honestly, I think this is something that we started, if not our first year, maybe our second year.
Okay. I thought so.
Yeah. It was certainly not the first year. I think it was the second year. And it started off – honestly, it was second runnings from a beer that we cooked down and added some sugar to it just as, you know, like let's do something fun with all this extra wort. And we didn't care for it initially. Like the first time we did it, we like pulled a sample of the beer as it was done fermenting, and we're like, okay, it's just, you know, kind of not exciting and had, you know, because the sugar had a little bit of a boozy flavor. So we're like, all right, well, you do what brewers do. You should throw hops in it.
Right.
And so we dry hopped it, and we still, like, even with that, we were like, you know, not really excited about it. And at that point, you know, I mean, it was clean. There was nothing wrong with it. It just wasn't very exciting. So we decided to throw oak chips and cinnamon in it. And the cinnamon sticks were literally like a last second thought. Like, there's putting all these oak chips in this beer and we're looking at this jar of cinnamon sticks. And we just cracked it open and dumped it in there. And then like 2 months later, Lisa's like, okay, well, we need, you know, we're doing an ugly sweater competition, but we got to have a beer release. Like, you have a Christmas beer? And I was like,
got this?
Yeah, yeah, I do. it's got cinnamon, so it's definitely a Christmas beer. And, you know, we popped it open and it was totally different. It smelled like a coconut macaroon. And so we, you know, kegged it off and served it. And that batch was also about like 11%. And, you know, that was probably at that point, it might've been the biggest beer we had done. And we serve it. We have this ugly sweater competition and people are crushing like 16 and 20 ounces of this.
Oh gosh.
And
yeah.
Yeah.
But that's how those things go. I get it.
It wasn't just an ugly sweater competition.
Yeah, it got ugly everywhere.
It was an ugly competition with sweaters as the theme. And so it was like, what, you know, the next year we're like, people are like, you're going to have that beer again, you know? I'm like, okay, yeah.
Sure.
Sure.
That's how it goes. That's how it gets going.
And so we had to figure out how to do it like from a like a full size batch. And when we did it this the next year, we really liked the base beer without the oak and the cinnamon. So we split it. So we do half of it as Naked Elephant, which is the beer without the oak and cinnamon, and then half of it as the white elephant.
This would be good naked. That's I like that. Okay.
Yeah, it's got the malt character is really, really nice. It's got a lot of Vienna malt in it, so it's got like a nice sweetness to it.
I really like Vienna malt. I always have.
I use more toasted malts than anything. I'm not a big crystal malt. I don't like that cloying kind of a raisiny sweetness. I'd rather have like the complexity that you get out of a, like, to me, like a beer tasting beer, like that malt.
Sure.
You know, there's, you know, it can be toasty, it can be sweet, it can be bread like, it can be nutty.
What's some other fun annual beers you guys are doing? You do stuff around your anniversary, right?
Right. We do Abbeyversary, and we've done different variations of that. We've done an All Michigan. What we called Abbey 10, which for our 10th anniversary.
I remember that one.
That was a bigger version of it. Again, it was 10% versus the regular, which is about
how clever.
Yeah, I know. I got it all going on all bases. we change up seasonality. We have Disco Lemonade in the summer.
I really enjoy that. A couple times when I've been at Jimmy John's Field there in Utica,
yeah,
you typically will have that on there, won't you?
Yeah, we almost have that 100% of the season.
That's probably that might even be the first time. No, you've had that for a bunch of years. But yeah, I go there. When I go there, I specifically know, okay, this is what I'm going to get to drink.
The first year that we did, you know, the stadium with them, that was that summer where it was like just 85, 90 degrees every day, not a drop of rain. And that
you beer, must have been killing it.
Oh my God,
beer.
I crushed at that ballpark.
So that's been a fun opportunity that's popped up over the last, like three seasons in now?
Yep,
I think
they're coming in their four seasons.
So okay. So the Jimmy John's Field, where it's a very minor league baseball, I like to call it.
They call it a development league.
Yeah.
And it's a non-affiliated minor league with four teams.
That sounds more intelligent than what I just said. Okay.
I read a lot of their literature.
I'll bet you have. So they came to you and Brooks, right, pretty early on, Brooks Brewing being also in Shelby Township,
yeah,
and said, hey, we want some local breweries here. Was that the premise?
Yeah. Honestly, somebody I knew was working with them and advertising with, you know, Andy at Cap and Cork.
Yep.
So he was looking to see what an advertising package would be there. And he had told me he had a meeting with them. And I was like, well, you know, drop a name, you know, like I'm interested to figure out, like, I want to sell beer there. And they were on our doorstep within probably about a week.
Wow. That's, yeah, like, that's so cool. I was super excited when I think I was working on the book and came out to interview you guys and you were working on the booth setup.
Yeah.
I remember you and Corey showing me that and thinking, wow, how exciting is that to do that?
Yeah. And we do it the way we do things, you know, it's like, we didn't just go out and buy, you know, a cooler from, you know, some draft company in wherever, you know, we found an old cooler on Craigslist, refurbished it, and then built up our own facade for it and built our own draft towers out of black pipe and just kind of went and figured out how we were going to make it our own, you know, versus just, you know, paying somebody else to do that for us.
Do they staff it or do you staff it?
They staff it.
They staff it. Okay. Yeah. I can't remember. I feel like I think I was just there one night and you guys had someone there though walking around because I got like a free shirt.
Yeah, we generally will do promotions, especially I think Friday nights we almost always have.
That's what it was. It was a Friday night. Okay.
where we just try to get out there and talk to people, see what, you know, talk to the people that are out there drinking our beers and
talk about being involved in the community. Like, what a great way to do that there.
Yeah. And it's such a local thing. And it's funny. It's like now when you're out and about, and first of all, like downtown Utica is like total 180, you know, it used to be, there were three or four bars there. Nothing was open most of the day except for the bars.
Yep.
And now you go down there and it's like, it's a little vibrant downtown again.
Yeah. You got that little beer bar down there now.
Steampunk.
Yeah, that's it. And you got the bike trail. There's from the stadium on that bike trail going away from it going, what would that be, north. There's single track mountain bike stuff in there that I bike on in the summer now. That's somewhat maintained.
That connects to Riverbends, correct?
It all does, yeah. So I actually go in Riverbends. So I go in off of, what would that be, 22
entrance?
Yeah, the 22 entrance is what I go
Auburn,
in on.
Is it Auburn? No, it's north Auburn. It's right by Hamlin Road.
Yeah, totally. And wow, but how cool that's all connected in there. You know, I went to high school with the mayor.
Oh.
Mr. Dion?
Yeah. What's his first name?
Todd. Oh, my God. I hope he's not listening to this. I'm sure he's not.
Todd or Tom?
Well, Tom. They're brothers. They're twins. And I constantly F it up, right? And they're really nice guys, though, both of them. So I don't know. I'm Facebook friends with – it's like Mayor – Todd or something.
Tom.
Shit. See, I don't know. We need someone looking this up for us.
You edit this, right?
Yeah. I don't edit anything. This is how it goes out. So that's all right. Real cool guy, though. You know.
Yeah, I've met him a couple times, and he's like, I've met him at the ballpark. You know?
Yeah, actually, my buddy, a good friend of mine who went to high school with me too, is like, oh, I saw him at, you know, the game, and how cool is that? And I'm like, yeah, man, that's wild. What an interesting opportunity, though. I mean, you start a brewery and then here you are in a ballpark doing fun community-based stuff. What's some other community-based stuff that you guys really – you guys do lots of fundraisers out of the brewery, right?
We do.
I know I've contributed some gift certificates for some causes before. Always wanted to do that again. Elisa's kind of reached out to me in the past on that.
Yeah. And that's – you know, her background is, you know, all community service type stuff. She's got a master's degree in family studies and master's degree in community services. Worked for 4-H, worked for the VISTA program. So coming into this was, you know, opening a business, a bar business especially, was well outside her wheelhouse, you know. But she's really brought it back to what she really, you know, is passionate about, which is charity and working with local community stuff.
She's kind of figured out how she can etch that into everything. I mean, yeah. I see you guys post a lot about things, and I always dug that.
For sure. Like, if we want to have an event, a lot of times, you know, it's if she can work it into a charity thing, she's always going to do that, because we have a lot of charities now that reach out to us. And
I can't imagine. I mean, I get in a given week, just little me, I'll get 24 requests for something.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine what you get.
I don't even know.
That's good.
But it's a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, if it's something where, like, if she can make it bigger by, you know, involving one of our events with a charity and stuff like that, she's always working to make that happen and to make, like, things fit and work for the best of both things, you know? Like, she started a thing called Presents for Pints, like, I think the first year we were open.
I remember that.
And it was, you know, like, bring in $5 worth of toilet paper and we'll buy you a beer, that kind of a thing. And then we ended up working with a charity that was, I don't want to say a halfway house, but it was kind of like a shelter for runaway kids. And we did that for, I believe, 2 years. And then it's just from there, it's moved on to several different charities where it's like, you know, we're trying to find somebody that we can help more. And the last couple of years, we've been doing Friends of Foster Kids where we, you know, it's no longer just presents. We call it Presents for Pints, but, you know, we're doing pizzas and growlers and things like that, and trying to get, you know, these kids. We're basically sponsoring, it's somewhere like 20 or 30 kids
every Christmas. That's a lot.
And they all have, you know, they all have their wishes, you know, and we try to get everything on the list. And I think almost every year we've been successful. And like last year, right towards the end, there were some kids that nobody had sponsored yet. And, you know, the last minute we're like, all right, you know, we get gift cards for things that people don't get. And we're like, okay, we'll just try to get more gift cards and buy all these things. And I think pretty much every year we've almost always gotten everything we could possibly get off the list. You know, I mean, there's some things that'd be like, I want this very specific thing. And it's like, well, that very specific.
You feel then that your customers kind of see that you guys have that passion and kind of rally around you guys from that standpoint?
I think it's that contagious thing where they're totally into it. And I come around November 1st, customers like, when's the tree going up? You know,
right.
When can we get going on this? Cause they want to get it and they want to get the shopping done. And, you know, it's part of their Christmas now, you know, they want to be involved with it. So, and one of the nice things about it is that we've really started to work with a lot of local charities, where it's not like just that you're giving some big foundation and other than a tax write-off, that's all you know about it. What happens?
Yeah, I really prefer to work with smaller local charities. I know this table's kind of wobbly. We spent like stony beer there.
I tried though. I did my best. We've really learned about some really cool local charities that I just don't think people realize that there's people in your own community doing these kind of things. Like the Daisy Connection was one that really struck me as like a huge charity that does an amazing work.
I'm not familiar locally with them. What do they do?
They put in playground equipment that is handicap accessible.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And they you know, find parks that don't have that. And they, you know, like if you can imagine, most people walk into a park and they never even think about the accessibility of it. And they just raise money and they do it for the community so that the community doesn't have the output, or, you know, like a lot of communities are going to look at something like that. Like, oh, that's a great idea, but we don't have money for that. Not in our budget.
That totally makes sense to me.
So it's a great charity. And even like I've just learned about two charities this winter that do things like there's like a hoodies for the homeless and another one that locally that's like, all right, well, these are some new charities that we can reach out to and try to do some sort of a drive for them. And it's just kind of a cool thing that to actually have something we can use as a vehicle to help the community. It's
right.
Like something I would have never thought of, but
yeah, like you're just like, I wanted to make beer and start this business. And now like these very cool opportunities are, you now have a platform where you could do that.
Right.
That's gotta be real gratifying. I found it the same way through the tour business. I just wanted to take people to breweries. And then I found, hey, wait a minute. Like there's lots of requests for charitable things, or I could create events around charities. Right. So like I do in the spring, I don't know if you're aware of this, it's called Cruising for the Trails. I do it. I have done it the last 6 years out of Clubhouse BFD. Mm-hmm. And then New Belgium Brewing was one of my sponsors. And we raise money for the Friends of the Clinton River Trail or Friends of the Pink Creek Trail. I do a spring and a fall. Mm-hmm. And we've raised about $25,000 that way. But they're just small nonprofits that people don't think about. They're like, oh, the trail's there. Like, what do they need? Well, there's lots of things they need, right?
Yeah.
And that was just one example, you know. And then out of that, through the biking community, then you start meeting people like, hey, have you ever heard of this group? Ever heard of that group? Hey, these guys do really cool stuff, right?
Yeah. And you know, that's another thing. I disc golf a lot, and that's just not a shameless plug for disc golf. But I feel like there's a lot of similarities between the mountain bike community and the disc golf community where it's like the majority of the maintenance that's done is the actual cyclist. You know, they don't wait for.
So I didn't know that about disc golf then. So like the guys that are really into disc golf are helping maintain courses?
Usually they do all the legwork, like raising money for the baskets and things like that. And
interesting.
They'll like approach community and be like, hey, you know, you have this park, you've got these acres that you don't use. And it's a lot of times that we end up using the acreage that is unusable for other things. You know,
which is, like, you're right. That is very similar to mountain biking. Oh, that's interesting. I never connected it.
Yeah,
that
there's
way.
A lot of similarities.
So you've been disc golfing for a long time now, right?
And about you guys 7 years. Yeah.
And you guys have an annual. You guys do an annual event.
We do,
right? Tied to disc golf.
Yep. We call it the Morningwood Open.
Yeah. Okay, that's why you have Morningwood beer, correct? Wait, no.
Well,
that's
we do.
Someone else. Wait, is that someone else?
It's sorry. Somebody else.
That is someone else. I'm
name.
Sorry.
Whoops. But okay, we had that name well established before.
Okay.
That, so.
All right, I've not tried to pull up that.
It's, you know, it's
so you get a lot of people out to that. I'm sorry. I'll try to change the subject a little bit.
we get about 140 to 150 golfers.
Oh, that's great. That seems like that'd be a lot for an event like that.
We put, we fill all of Stony Creek's that has two 18s, and we'll fill both 18s. And this year we're going to venture out and do it because we have the Morningwood. It's just – it's a fun tournament. It's bring your own partners. It's not a sanctioned tournament. So disc golf is a very tournament-oriented thing.
All my friends, that's what they would say. Yeah. Yeah.
And then so in the spring we're going to launch like the Sherwood Brewing Open, and it's going to be a more serious tournament, Class C.
It's got a more serious name.
Yeah. Well, for sure, yeah.
Jeez.
So, yeah, it's – and then, you know, as far as the tournaments go, like this time of the year I play two different tournaments that are both charity-based. The Hangover Open, which is New Year's Day, and they just
– wow, great name.
Yeah, very appropriate name. There's years that like half the guys there are like, oh, I didn't sleep. I'm still drunk, yeah. You know, they show up and play disc golf. But it's for charity, and I think they just said that they raised like $7,000 this year.
Oh, that's great. And
for a total, in 4 years, they've raised $25,000, I think.
And that's pretty similar to what I'm getting from mine. And I'm not trying to cure cancer. I'm just trying to make a fun event that raises some money, right?
Yeah.
So you know how, because you know how that can go, right? There's the huge organizations, and those are all great with what they do, and they have these huge mass things. And then you got these more smaller sort of events and that raise modest money is what I call it, right? Like when I say I raised $7,000 last year for Trails in Oakland County, mm-hmm. and I'm proud of that. But you know, I look at some of these other events, you know, and they're asking me for like a $50 gift certificate or something. Like, yeah, last year we raised, you know, $250,000 for blah blah. I'm thinking, holy shit, you know. I'm like, okay,
yeah, it's, you know, the Black Tie Gala,
yeah,
you know, where they
a little different,
$250
right?
a plate people or whatever.
They're auctioning off humans and stuff, and you know, I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to give people a beer at the end and maybe ride a bike.
And it's gonna be directly helpful.
See, yeah,
so you feel like. Maybe the profit margin on what you do or the charitable margin on what you do is better. You know, like, you know, some of these companies might raise $1 million, but it might cost them $999,000 to raise it.
That was always our thing. Cause I'm always like, I keep it so thin on what I do. Like, I don't need to waste a lot of money. I have, just like you have in a brewery, you have a place you can do things out of.
Yeah.
Where there's costs that you don't have to incur. I'm the same way.
I've
right.
Got a or free I get space and then try to work with other people like, hey, you know, I'm not going to buy something from you, but if you donate something, you know, that gives us an opportunity to raise money. If I have to buy it, I'm not going to be able to raise as much money.
If that's my stance too, right? Yeah. I use a bike shop, a brewery, a venue, me, and then I get volunteers that are all bike enthusiasts that help me. You add all that together, every event like that's just – it's all the same way, right? Mm-hmm. Once you figure that out, then you can – put more of the money you get into the actual cause than administrative stuff.
Yeah, it's more pass through than.
Yeah, I like that. Very cool.
Yeah, and then this week we're playing the Frisbee Ice Bowl, which is a for the Capuchin Soup Kitchen.
And they good
they
cause.
They raise a ton of money for that.
Oh, very cool. So, wow, boy, we could probably do a whole show just talking about this. Jesus,
beer charity.
Yeah, no doubt. Right? How interesting. So, okay, what didn't I even get to yet here? We're kind of starting to run out of time. I knew we'd burn through an hour really fast. Let's see. That's all right. We don't have to mention all this per se. you still do a lot of really cool beer dinners. I haven't been to one in a couple of years, but I'm jonesing to kind of go to one. You got one coming up, right?
Yeah, our next beer dinner is we're doing a Polish food beer dinner.
How fun. Love Polish food.
Oh, I grew up in
love
Detroit,
pierogies.
But it was a very Polish neighborhood.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, all my friends.
I'm like a quarter Polish.
Grade school and high school with, they're all Polish. So like this is kind of a very exciting thing for me. And then we're working with one of our customers is opening up a pierogi shop. So she's going to do one of the courses for us. We brewed a Polish style lager.
Nice, easy drinking lager. That's pretty much what a Polish lager is, isn't it?
Yeah, but easy drinking for a Polish lager is like 7%. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
so it's going to have a little bit more ABV.
Nice.
So
you still got tickets available to that?
We do.
So if folks want to get tickets for that, they go to SherwoodBrewing.com.
We'll have an event and then they'll have like a Eventbrite or brown paper bag or brown paper tickets, I think.
Okay.
Or they can call the brewery and we'll get them figured out. And then
– you don't want me to give your phone number out and have them call you? No?
No, that's okay. I don't answer strange numbers. So yeah, the calling the brewery up or checking our Facebook page or website. It'll have the information on there.
You guys really do a good job of updating things that you got going on though. So it's always kind of kept me in the loop pretty good.
Yeah. We try to have a lot of events going on. Like as soon as we're done with the Polish beer dinner, we'll be looking on to what's the next.
What are you about quarterly with those beer dinners?
We're trying to increase that. I'd like to be like every other month.
Okay.
So we did two Wild Game beer dinners.
I still haven't gotten to one of those. I've always wanted to go. Pops up on a date that I can't make work.
Well, and we get lumps for that because if we choose, like last year we did it right before opening day and everybody's like, well, I already left for opening day. I'm not going to be able to make it. So we ended up doing one in January. This year we did one about a week before opening day and then one right at the beginning of December or end of November, somewhere in there. I can't remember what the date was. So about a month apart and they both sold out.
Get a lot of regulars then that do that?
Oh, yeah.
I would think you would.
With a Wild Game, we see a lot of the same crew. And we'll do it like when we did two in the same year, we do a different menu. So, and we'll have different types of game and stuff like that. So that's part of the fun thing about the Wild Game one. It's just, sometimes we go to the store and we're like, all right, well, what do you have? Wild boar bacon. They have camel. They've got alpaca. I mean, like,
oh my just gosh,
stuff
so
you
wild.
Wouldn't even imagine eating, but they've got it there. Kangaroos on the short list of things that we want to try to work into something.
No shit. So, kangaroo. I've definitely never had kangaroo.
Yeah. That's why it's on the short list. We're like, okay, we got to do this next time.
I live in Berkeley. I could get you a lot of squirrels if you need them because they're all over my backyard. I'd love to get rid of all them.
We don't want to go that wild game.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just checking. I'm here to help. So
we use Wild Game.
Yeah. Right. Wild Game. Well, Ray, I think we're about out of time here. I want to thank you for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing these great beers. These are – I'm a little warm in the face now after drinking that 11%er. Holy crap, right? So to everyone listening to the Beer Tour Guy Show episode 19, I want to thank you for listening. You can get more information about Beer Tour Guy Show on beertourguy.com, betterondraft.com, podcastdetroit.com, motorcitybrewtours.com. If you want to get more information about Ray and Sherwood Brewing and all the great stuff he's doing over there in Shelby Township, go to sherwoodbrewing.com. Check him out on all the social media platforms. And on my next show, I should be interviewing, I think, Rob the Brewer, who I believe was the brewer at Traffic Jam and Snug. I think he has moved on. Someone told me that last night but didn't tell me what brewery. So that's about all I got to say about that. So I should have Rob on the February episode. But I want to thank Ray again for coming in today.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Finding the place, finding the right time, getting here on the right day, all that good stuff. Okay, I want to thank everybody for listening. Peace.